here to present high efficiency in modern solid-state UHF-VHF TV transmitters is Walt Gumbert from Rohde & Schwarz. Walt Gumbert has spent the past 20 years meeting the transmitter needs of U.S. broadcast as well, helping them navigate technology inflection points such as the DTV transition, ATSC mobile handheld, and the high-power solid-state revolution, and soon to come, the FCC repack and ATSC 3.0. Walt attended Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, earning a Bachelor of Engineering degree in electrical engineering. He received his master's in business administration from Robert Morris University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Please welcome Walt Gumbert.
Thank you. I know it's 2 o'clock after lunch. People might be getting the drowsies, so I'll be fast. Lots of pictures, very few formulas. Dave likes formulas. We'll start off with a small analogy. So I would imagine everybody in this audience has been in the market for a cell phone sometime in the past 5 years, maybe less, depending on how fast you turn over your iPhone. How many had this on their shopping list? And I wouldn't be surprised if some of you guys did, because the first SBE show that I did, somebody gave me one of these. He's like, I love these phones. So he gave me one to take to my SBE presentations, but it looks like a bomb, so I can't travel with it. Of course, that wasn't on your shopping list. This is what was on your shopping list. Why? Because features, battery life, power consumption, it's digital, not analog, lots of reasons. So when the repack comes around and you have to shop for a new transmitter, are you going to look for one of these? An IoT? Maybe. You may be thinking, yeah, of course, I need lots of power. That's what you need to buy. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about today's modern solid-state transmitter design and why, quite possibly, solid-state may be a more reasonable option for you now in 2016. So to go through this, we're going to look at three different points. Power, that's one big component that you need to factor. How much power do I need? The performance that you're going to get out of your next transmitter. Am I going to get adequate efficiency out of a solid state? And payback. What's the cost to operate this? Am I going to spend too much money on this transmitter? So let's take a look at power. And to do this, I made some bubble charts. The only way I could think of to compare transmitters. And we're going to look back at the beginning of DTV when everybody bought their first high-power digital transmitter. So let's just imagine that you needed a 60-kilowatt transmitter, a two-tube IoT. Did you even have the option of a solid-state transmitter? I think no. Really, back in 98, a big solid-state transmitter was about 5 kilowatts. Efficiency is the bottom to top on the left, and then, of course, the time. Solid-state efficiency was around 15% back at the beginning of digital. And a standard IoT, and we're going to be talking about plant efficiency here, not the efficiency of the tube itself, was about 35%. A 5-kilowatt solid-state transmitter was about $250,000 back then for a 5-kilowatt solid-state transmitter, and it was fairly big. It was a good two racks or more of equipment. So if you wanted to build that out to a 60-kilowatt transmitter, it would be ginormous, and it would be about $3 million. The 60-kilowatt IoT was around $700,000 back then. Your choice was easy, not a hard decision to make. Around 2003, a new transistor came out. LDMOS transistor, along with a new IoT, the high-efficiency IoT, the MSDC. So now the IoT puts solid-state even further behind. Efficiencies grew to about 18% with a solid-state transmitter. People were getting 20 or maximum around 28 kilowatts out of a solid-state transmitter. It was air-cooled. The IoT, the press collector IoT, was probably about $800,000, a little bit more expensive than the standard IoT. But a 20 kilowatt solid-state transmitter was around $870 to $1 million for a solid-state transmitter that was probably a little under 30. And I know that because the company I was working for sold about three of them to PBS stations who would prefer at that time to spend $1 million on a solid-state transmitter than to go with an IoT at that time. And the reason that they had for this was they wanted to get one chunk of money, their grant, spend it on a transmitter, and not have to worry about budgeting to replace the tube down the line every 3 to 5 years or what have you. So even in 2003, broadcasters saw the benefits of solid state. The big problem was that was about a 10 cabinet solid state transmitter, air-cooled, 18% efficient. It cost far more to operate than the IoT, but they still bought it. The next step was a bigger transistor. Nothing changed on the IoT side, but we were able to bring efficiencies up to about 25% and still, you know, 20 to 30 kilowatts, depending on how big you wanted to build it out. Also was around the time when liquid cooling became accepted, more popular. And what that did was bring down the size of the transmitters a bit. The transmitter still, and it also brought the price of the transmitter down. So a 20 kilowatt solid state liquid cooled was about $700,000. And that's equivalent to the price of that that 60 kilowatt press collector. Well, that's about $800,000. So let's jump to 2013 with liquid cooling, new transmitter designs and amplifier designs, the latest parts. You could build a standard amplifier solid-state transmitter that was 70 kilowatts in four racks. So you've got the size down to a manageable size of a transmitter. The power is more than the 60 kilowatts that we're comparing to. But the price is actually more than the IoT here. Nowhere near the difference that we had back in 2003. The price is a little bit more, but the big problem is the efficiency. So even in 2013, the best efficiency with a standard amplifier solid-state transmitter was 30% versus what we're looking at is about 45% efficient depressed collector IoT. Now, that 45% is plant efficiency, like I mentioned before. I know you may have heard that the depressed collector is 60% efficient or high 50s. That's only the tube. And in fact, you know, the efficiency of the solid state amplifier pallet itself is much more. It's probably 40 or 42%. But so at this point, we've taken care of the power, right, and the size. So in 2013, you could get all the power that you need. The problem was the performance. And by performance, I mainly mean efficiency. So why is it that it's so hard to build an efficient solid-state amplifier? Well, it's not. So a solid-state amplifier is actually about 78% efficient at average power. The problem is actually with ATSC and the peaks and average power, so the peak to average ratio in ATSC. So even though you're your amplifier wants to run at the average power. It has to be biased to pass the peak so it doesn't clip the data. And that means that you're going to be running in a much less efficient part of the curve most of the time, and very rarely in the most efficient part of the curve. So that means the problem is actually the peak to average ratio of ATSC, or the crest factor. So what can we do to solve this problem? That was the problem that was presented to our engineers. And there's a number of different things that could be tried. A lot of things are proven existing. One thing you can do is manipulate the signal with the exciter. So say signal manipulation, which is crest factor reduction. And crest factor reduction is pretty simple. It just lowers the supply voltage a bit, reduces the crest factor of the signal. But this only returns about 1% in efficiency. So that's not going to be a game changer that's going to allow you to replace your IoT with solid state. What else could we look at? Power supply manipulation. So there is a method called switch mode power amplification in which the power supply turns the transistors either 100% on or 100% off, and it takes an amplitude modulated signal and transfers it to pulse width modulation by turning the power supplies on and off. And of course, you save power when the power supply is off. Big problem with this is, as you can imagine, it's very hard on transistors. So additional transistor development would be required for it to be viable, and hard on power supplies. And it was not it did return quite a bit of efficiency, 10 to 15%, but was not considered a reliable solution for broadcast. It also caused noise and required a narrowband filter at the output, which is a no-no for a broadcast product. So you don't want to have a filter that's required for each amplifier to filter out the noise. Another way of increasing efficiency is power supply manipulation, where it's called envelope tracking, where there's actually a microprocessor on each amplifier that adjusts the supply voltage to the amplifier and it tracks the signal. This works. It's not hard on the transistors, not hard on the power supplies. It does take up additional room on each amplifier tray because it does require microprocessing to do. It also requires a license fee to the company that licenses it, that holds the patent. And so the amount of space that you have to take up for the processing on the amplifier reduces the amount of space you have for more amplifiers, and it makes it hard for designers to build a high-power solid-state amplifier. This also returns quite a bit of efficiency, 10 to 15%, but it was not chosen. There was actually a manufacturer who brought this one year to NAB and did consider it. It got that far. And then another method would be amplifier manipulation. So, as we said earlier, the problem with an efficient amplifier is not that it can't be done efficiently, it's the peak to average ratio. So a method, a very old method, Doherty amplification, can be used. And what Doherty does is it separates the peak and average in the amplifier and has a main amplifier and a peak amplifier, or an average amplifier and a peak amplifier. And what they do is it's combined at the output. The two amplifiers are combined for your output power. But historically, the problem is in the combiner at the output of the amplifiers. And this has got to be narrow band for maximum efficiency. So to have an amplifier designed based on Doherty that was actually would return the efficiency you need, you would need many designs. I heard 12 or so different amplifier designs to go through your factory to cover the whole UHF band. So that was the problem. So the solution that most broadcasters now to this point have gone after is Doherty. The pros, proven technology, low complexity. Transistors are readily available. You can use any transistor that's available out there, and high return. The cons is still the narrow band inherentness of the design. So why is it narrow band? And it boils down to the matching characteristics of the combiner. And the Bode-Fano limit, what this graph shows is bandwidth versus the coefficient of reflection. And it shows for a broadband circuit, the coefficient of reflection is higher than the narrow band. And you want to be as close to zero. And you can see the narrow band circuit is closer to zero. And that's just a fact. That's what causes it. So for brilliant efficiency, you need brilliant matching. That's what our engineers say. Broadband design means worse matching, so you have to go to a narrow band design. And the solution that we came to is an adjustable, easily adjustable narrow band design. So everything on the amplifier exists from day one. If for some reason you have to change channel, I'm sure anything that's purchased during the repack is going to be on the channel you're going to be on for a while. If you change channel, there's an easy adjustment made so that your amplifier is always operating in narrowband mode. And what other problems are there with the Doherty amplifier? Well, the best efficiency is achieved when the transistors in saturation are at its peak power. But, and this requires as close to a constant load impedance as possible, the matching network, which is in the combiner. But it doesn't operate at that point. The power is continuously changing up and down the curve. So the efficiency can't be achieved over a wide band with a constant load impedance. So since the compression point is in inverse proportion to the impedance, the solution is to dynamically adjust the impedance of the load of the low power amplifier. And we'll see what that looks like. This is called load pull. So how a Doherty amplifier works is, at a low power signal, the main transmitter has a load of 2 times the resistive load and reaches saturation, and the peak transistor is off. So only the average power of the main amplifier is on. When the signal reaches minus 6 dB of peak, the peak amplifier comes on. And its current, the peak amplifier's current, adjusts the load impedance of the main amplifier, which is the load pull. And the power of the main and peak amplifiers are combined. When the signal reaches maximum power, both the main, or the average, and peak amplifiers are in saturation and at maximum efficiency. And so you can see really the difference is in the main amplifier is much more efficient from zero to half power, and then it's in saturation through to peak power. And the peak operates only from half power to peak power at the same efficiency that it was before. And when you take a look at that, it's a standard amplifier in blue versus the Doherty amplifier. You can see the increase in efficiency under the pink curve. and at average power, where your amplifier is typically operating, you can see how much more efficient it is in Doherty than in standard. So, other than the amplifier design, what else contributes to the efficiency of a modern solid-state amplifier? Well, I think all high-efficiency amplifiers, high power at least, are liquid-cooled. So what you want is a well-designed, optimized pump stand with variable speed pumps that only run when they need to, at the speed they need to run. There's actually high efficiency fans. The blades are actually designed to be efficient. They sort of have little fins on the end. And the fan speeds vary based on the temperature, only come on when they need to. And a custom designed liquid cooled amplifier system that is going to take as much heat out of the cabinet as possible. So you want to liquid cool the amplifiers and power supplies as well. So a lot of your heat loss does come from the power supplies. So by taking as much heat out of the amplifiers and power supplies as possible, you're going to also reduce the amount of air conditioning that you need in the room. That's why we talk about the total site efficiency. Taking into account the power that your transmitter is going to use and the amount of power that you're going to need to properly air condition your transmitter. You know, the high power air-cooled transmitters need a lot of air conditioning, a lot of air conditioning. And a properly designed liquid-cooled transmitter needs very, very little air conditioning, typically about as much air conditioning as required to keep you comfortable. Well-designed modern power combiners. So instead of having a lot of cables and connectors, each connection point is loss. So as few cables and connection points as possible. If you have direct connection straight to the power amplifier, you can take a look at an actual back of a transmitter cabinet. What you see there is the power combiner, which is the aluminum backplane, the shiny backplane. And on the front of that, the amplifier is plugged directly into it. There are no cables. You'll see no hoses to be worried about as far as liquid connections. The combiner itself is liquid cooled. If you look on the left, there's actually a combiner reject load resistors right here. They're attached to the liquid that's leaving the amplifier or the transmitter. With modern design, now one thing about Doherty is because the peak amplifier is off part of the time, that 70 kilowatt transmitter is actually now 55 kilowatts. But the efficiency goes from 30% to 40% efficient. So now we solve the problem of efficiency, and solid state is now a comparable technology to even the depressed collector IoT. Now today, in 2016, it's even advanced more, where you can get up to a little over 100 kilowatts out of one liquid-cooled solid-state transmitter at about 40% efficiency, plant efficiency, including cooling, pumps, heat exchangers. So this final bubble chart just shows how far we've come from 98 to 2016, where solid state was not even close to being an option, to where you can get more than a dual tube IoT out of it, up to 100 kilowatts of power out of a solid state transmitter. The efficiency is very comparable. There's going to be an article that I'll show up here where the owner tested their depressed collector transmitter plant versus their new solid state plant, and the difference was 2% in favor of the depressed collector. Price is more for the solid state. but other factors have to be taken into consideration other than just the transmitter price. We solved the power, we solved the performance, so let's look at payback. Why would you consider paying maybe more? Here's the article that I talked to you about. It compared a high power Doherty transmitter versus a depressed collector transmitter. And the difference was 2% plant efficiency. And when you read through the article, you hear about how much easier it was to install, how much easier the maintenance was going to be, and why the differences were well worth it. Here's another case study. This is one of the high power solid states that I mentioned that I knew that people were interested in solid state back in 2003-ish because they bought these, or it was 2008 or so like that, because they wanted to buy a solid state transmitter. And this is what the 28 kilowatt solid state looked like back then. It was 18% efficient, about 30 kilowatts, it was 20 feet long, and cost about $131,000 a year to operate. It was replaced with a four cabinet liquid cooled transmitter that made 55 kilowatts. So we doubled the power. We doubled the power, but they saved $32,000 a year, and it was less than half the size. Another case study, this is in Wausau, where a station had an analog diacrode transmitter that was converted to digital. I think it was 15% efficient, and they replaced it with a solid state transmitter. And you can see the first year, it shows last year's kilowatt hours used, about 130,000, and the next year dropped to 61. So these folks actually got a $42,000 rebate check from the power company. And this is actually Focus on Energy. So this was in Wisconsin. You all pay for this program every month in your power bill. So there's a man named Kelly Cavanaugh that works for Focus on Energy. And if you're interested, he'd like to talk to anybody about what he can do for you to convert your existing plant transmitter. He also works on the efficiency lighting, high efficiency lighting, and projects like that. He was amazed when we did this project. He had no idea there were power savings out there like this that could be had. So if you're interested, I have his information. I have an email from him, and I can give you all his contact data for you to talk to. He said even the co-ops in the state have something that's available to them. Another example is VHF, and this case study was in Puerto Rico. And what makes this, well, they had an old, very inefficient VHF transmitter. And it could show you that the first or the original VHF transmitter drew 64 amps. And the new high efficiency VHF transmitter, which VHF is 50% efficient, drew about 20. Now, to take a look at this, so to take a look at the power savings or their cost savings, they paid about $93,000 a year because they were paying 26 cents a kilowatt hour in Puerto Rico. This is only a 7 kilowatt transmitter. And it'll drop to $31,000 a year from 93, about a third of the power. So I don't know how many folks are operating some sort of older, very inefficient transmitter, something that was an analog converted to digital, you know, that wasn't meant to do that. But there are opportunities out there. Other paybacks, obviously for solid state, redundancy. You've got one, maybe two high power amplifiers in an IoT versus up to 72 in a very large solid state transmitter, where when you lose one, you're down to half power. One IoT, you're down to half power. And loss of a PA, you barely even notice it on the larger designs. Spare parts redundancy. I don't know how many of you have looked into buying a replacement tube lately, but the lead times are very long, and they're getting to be very, very expensive. Whereas replacement parts for your solid-state transmitters are, you can keep them in-house, they're not a huge investment, or all of the manufacturers keep them in stock at their office or factory. A lot of cost savings there, especially if you're down a tube and don't have a spare and the lead time is 8 weeks. And in maintenance. Some people don't want to hear this, but there aren't going to be a lot of people that know how to work on an IoT by the end of this next transmitter's life. I know a lot of you guys know how to work on, you know, the 32 kV high power tubes, but the transmitter is going to last 15 to 20 years. So for the station, there's going to be cost consideration in the maintenance of the transmitter over its life. Maintenance of a solid state transmitter is simple. And that was the last slide anyhow. So I will, if anybody has any questions on what we've done or what's available, I'd be glad to answer your questions. This one back there, in the back.
Right now we have a 2007 Acrodyne IoT transmitter up in Rhinelander, and it's liquid cooled and all that. If we were to go with like a solid state, would we have to get a new liquid cooled system, or could we retrofit or something fit this one into it?
No, it's not recommended. Like I said, the system that your vendor designs with the transmitter has a lot to do with the efficiency. One other important thing is, in a well-designed system, there should not be dissimilar metals in the liquid loop. So for instance, our transmitter has only stainless steel, aluminum, and then the interconnect, let's see if I can go back a few. So you can see the green hose is the interconnect hose. That sort of has a chemical resistant PVC liner. So all those come together to make the coolant inside last longer, because the interaction of the aluminum and copper causes the aluminum to corrode, and it causes the coolant to deteriorate. The coolant is antifreeze, it's also corrosion inhibitor, and it's also lubricant for the pumps. So as opposed to your IoT that has a dry sump with oxygen and air inside of it, if you see the pump stands are right beside the transmitter, there's a pressure bladder in the bottom, an expansion tank. So it's a pressurized system with no oxygen in it to prevent oxidation of the liquid. So they're really different products. You can see how big that pump stand is. There's three of them there. Do you know how big your pump stand is? It's huge. It's huge. It's probably, I mean, it's outside. It's got a big metal box full of coolant, and the pumps are like industrial, you know, factory pumps. Yeah.
Rechanneling the Rohde & Schwarz Doherty amplifier, can it be done in the field? Does it involve soldering a bunch of chip capacitors in different places?
Yeah, there's a jumper that goes from the bands. It's a physical jumper.
So I only have to inventory one amplifier?
Absolutely. And if the amplifier is not on the right band, it operates in standard mode, so it knows. In fact, we had delivered, and I don't know if it's that one, the Puerto Rican transmitter was on the wrong band. And they installed it, and they're like, wow, it's 40% efficient. That's really good, but Walt told me it would be 50% efficient. And I said, yeah, I did. I don't know why it's 40% efficient. And it was on the wrong band. All the amplifiers were running in standard mode. So you move the jumper, and it goes to the proper band. The tuning is very simple. It's all built in. There's no tweaking. It's just moving of a loop.
Jugs of Prestone? Or is there a proprietary purchase of proper coolant?
It's not proprietary, but it's specified. We do specify the type that we recommend. We used to run, actually, literally, Havilland Dexcool. And I guess that it's sticky. And over time, it would affect the pumps. There's a brand that we do recommend that we supply. You can get it here in the U.S. And it comes in like 5 gallon jugs. There's maybe 15 in the whole system. Yeah. Yes?
You talk about high voltage IOTs and you have problems with insulators and things, but solid state transmitters are high current connections. How much trouble has that given you, and what do you do to keep those high current connections tight?
Well, it hasn't given us trouble. I know that the German engineers engineer a huge overhead factor into the system. This is what they tell us also. Exactly what you're talking about is what they have to consider. And the transmitters run on 400 volts. And all I can tell you is that we haven't had any issues with it. You know, there were 500 supplied to MediaFlow in around 05. And a lot of them were what we would call the 7000 series, which was the first series of transmitters. And we still repair those today, and they're being repurposed by broadcasters all over the country. That is not an issue that we're seeing. But you're absolutely right. Your question would be better suited for the design engineers in the factory. Thank you.